The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Well, the round finishes on Wednesday at 6pm and 24 hours later, both Collingwood and Essendon have to pick their 22 for round 6. It is quite unbelievable here on the Fox Footy Podcast that we're here on a Thursday morning and discussing round 6 after round 5 finished just over 12 hours ago. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth. It's been a rough start for us all on a Thursday morning after a very, very large football weekend. Firstly, let's welcome Peter Senior himself, Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Ben. I think a lot of our listeners won't know who Peter Senior is. He's a golfer, was a golfer, still is a golfer actually, but on the seniors tour.
And fittingly, and you are the Peter Senior as the senior AFL reporter.
And you, Max Lawton, Hi. Are the chief fence flipper correspondent for FoxSports.com.
Wow, whack. Does Max flip and flop, does he?
No.
Speaking to fence flippers, of course, at the Gabba.
Yes. Oh,
like getting,
yes.
Getting in touch with the man who was allegedly fined, then actually not.
Which was, yes, which was incorrect.
Yeah. Incorrect, as I discovered when I spoke to him, just gave him a call. It's like, hey, what's going on? It's like, oh, no, that didn't happen.
They do things differently up in Brisbane, don't they? Hello to all our Queensland fans.
Yes, they do. Now, well done, Maxie. Nice little scoop.
Can we say with the short week, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the turnaround for Collingwood and Essendon with the Wednesday game to a Sunday game. Can we just think of the poor journalists? We have one day to preview everything. It's so unfair for us.
People don't want to hear this. People don't care about journalists. Play on, let the footy go. You know, next year, Ben, there's going to be footy 8 days in nine at this time of the year.
Because it merges with Easter, doesn't it?
Yes, Easter, Good Friday, Anzac Day, all come as one. There'll be one day off in nine. It'll be a footy fiesta, like Major League Baseball style.
Yes.
There's games all the time. It'll be great. A real fixturing nightmare, but I don't really care about that. Travis Olds can deal with that.
So not too many people have had a chance. Well, certainly Collingwood Essendon and the match committee has to sit on Thursday and they won't have much time to
match committee
think about
sat
it.
Last night after the game.
Yeah, probably would have had to, and particularly Essendon, because they might have some big decisions to make, Tommy, which might lead us nicely into your match committee big call for the week.
Yes, good segue from you, Ben. Well, you. Essendon have to make at least two changes. Josh Green and Josh Begley as well. We're going to be out. Begley, we hope it's not an ACL, but by the time you listen to this, it may have been diagnosed. Dylan Clark hasn't debuted for Essendon yet. He's a midfielder playing in the VFL, a left footer.
Which school did he go to again?
Well, he's a Melbourne Grammar student, that's irrelevant.
Is he not a good Roville boy as well?
He's a good Roville
boy. Yeah, our two interests.
Absolutely. So look at it's not my interest, but anyway, look at his stats. Averaging 32 disposals per game across three matches in the VFL this year, averaging 11 tackles. Essendon around the clearances against Collingwood were, well, even though they won some clear, I just didn't rate them at all. They didn't have the hardness required.
Weren't damaging.
Dylan Clark's ready to go. Get him in, and Worsfold, if you're John Worsfold, you get him in right now.
They take on Melbourne this weekend, Maxie, which leads us into your match committee big call.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Melbourne is that they've been quite good at getting inside 50s, but they have no idea what to do with the ball once it's in there. And Jesse Hogan playing up the field is getting more touches, but is not kicking as many goals. I think it's 1.2 goals per game average down to 0.4. You need a big target. You need a Cam Pedersen type target in there for Melbourne. I would love to see him brought in. He's been kicking bags in the VFL as well. Mm. For Casey, I think he makes a lot of sense for the Demons against the Bombers this Sunday.
You're big on Cam Pedersen as well, Tommy, coming back in.
Max stole my big call of the week, which is fine. I'm allowing Max to go with it because I completely agree. I just can't understand how Jesse Hogan can be playing so far up the ground, which is great. Mm. But let me ask you this, Ben. Would you prefer Jesse Hogan to have 8 touches and kick 5 or 25 touches and kick 2 or 3? I prefer the
2
the
or
former.
3 is still pretty good for.
I want him kicking 5, mate. He's a key forward.
The problem is he's not kicking 2 or 3. He's kicking 1.
Yeah, and he's getting a lot of the ball. In fact, we're seeing highlights on the TV here in the studio at the moment of Jesse Hogan getting the ball in the back flank. I know the modern-day game has these forwards pushing up high, and he's always going to be a good runner and being able to push up like that. But, geez, he needs to get more of the ball closer to goal. I just wonder when Tom McDonald comes back, whenever that is, whether McDonald will play that role. We know he's an elite runner, and Hogan will then play closer to goal. But it's not favouring the team.
And you contrast that with what the opposite numbers did on Tuesday night, Richmond, where Dustin Martin's been playing one out in the forward 50 just by himself when they're having kick-ins against Lions.
Just on the Ds, who's under the who's under the pump the most? Is it the players or is it the coaches? Or in particular, Simon Goodwin? Because it's sort of been quite split, I think, in the aftermath of their loss to Richmond.
Well, I think in general, my philosophy, regardless of club or situation, is the buck always stops with the coach. So I think whenever you're unsure who's under the pump the most, it's always the coach. But it's not by a lot in this situation. I think the players are under the pump. I think the administration's under the pump. The board's under the pump. The whole club is under pressure to perform, because it's been a long... 2006 was the last time they played finals. 1964 was the last premiership. And there are expectations now that they must not just be playing finals, but winning finals. And on recent form, they are a long way off that.
Is the pump not a bit unfair in this scenario? No Tom McDonald, no Jack Viney, quite a few injuries
like that.
Yeah, but
everyone's missing players though, aren't they?
But yes, but you can still mention it as a way that they cannot play the way they want to. You mentioned it with Jesse Hogan playing up the ground.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
You think he would be?
I think the main criticism, Tom, has been structurally and tactically rather than effort or personnel.
Yes. That was an honest loss to Richmond.
It was.
Richmond at the MCG is the best team in the comp by some margin.
I don't think there's any shame losing to Richmond, but I think the week before made Melbourne fans a little bit more scathing in their criticism of the Richmond defeat. Losing to Richmond, you're right. Stuck with them for three quarters, they did, and that's okay. The Hawthorn loss is still reverberating around that club, and it is not good because at 2-3, they're on the precipice of going 2-4, and it's very hard to make finals from that position.
Mm-hmm. Something that's not good as well, Tom, as we go to air here on the Fox Footy podcast, and a little bit more might have developed by the time you're listening, but some interesting developments in the Sam Powell-Pepper investigation, which was the findings from the AFL-led investigation were released on Wednesday, which added another week onto Powell-Pepper's suspension. He missed the first week due to a club-imposed suspension, took himself out of selection contention for the clash against Geelong. Now the AFL has put forward that he will be missing the upcoming clash against North Melbourne this weekend. So that was released on Wednesday after the incident at the nightclub happened quite some time ago. But sensationally, I think it has to be said, David Koch via Triple M and Tom Brown this morning on radio has released the following statement. The whole respect and responsibility policy leaves the clubs in the dark. They take complete control. I issued them a grievance notice before they would start talking sense. My biggest issue was that they are railroading a kid and trying to rebuild their reputation with women because of the misdemeanors of their former executives. In Sam Powell-Pepper's case, a woman anonymously made these claims, did not press charges with police, which we were happy for her to do. We have vision of the entire night and the head of the integrity unit refused to see it. I'm putting it on the agenda at the next president's meeting. That was David Koch, Port Adelaide president, to Triple M this morning.
To Eddie Maguire, another AFL president. Mm. Well, where do you start with that? The most scathing part of that for me is referring to Simon Lethlean and Richard Simkus at the AFL. Yes. That the AFL effectively is now trying to cover its tracks or make
good almost.
Make good of the errors that happened in the past and using a club as its pawn to do so. And that is a big allegation to make. And it sort of hits to the heart of dishonesty or lack of integrity at the AFL that is perceived to be a really important part of this game. Now, I think Port Adelaide have every right to be frustrated here if there's no evidence, as they say there isn't. But in the end, the AFL is charged with putting together an investigation. Port Adelaide is part of the AFL. So if Port don't agree with it, they've got every right to say so. But I think for Koshy to come out and actually articulate why they don't agree with it is brave and bold and may potentially keeps the story going further than it needs to go.
Is the AFL wrong, though? If Koshy's point is correct, that the AFL is trying to make good for the way it has handled its treatment of issues with women in the past, is that wrong that they're trying to fix that by going the other way?
Well, I think it's a bit... They do honestly feel that, but I just think it's convenient that he's saying it now.
Yes, I think that's the thing he can blame, but he almost wants to feel like they have become the scapegoat. Yeah. Is the Sam Powell-Pepper handling of the situation, has that been unreasonable?
By who?
By the AFL. Has the AFL's handling of this situation been unreasonable?
I don't think anyone knows that, because no one knows exactly what happened.
But is that not okay, because if the woman did not want to press charges and put that information out there and did not want to be involved in this way, it is very much her right to have that be secretive.
Yeah, it is.
It's a very tough situation because of the number of variables.
And it's messy how it's all played out in the end. So it will be on Thursday at around about lunchtime. Port Adelaide Chief Executive Keith Thomas will hold a press conference. He released a statement last night, very frustrated and disappointed that it took so long for the AFL to make this decision. And it did take a good couple of weeks for it to come out, hence their frustration. But we might hear a little bit more at this press conference. Yeah. And it would be interesting to see whether what Koch said to Triple M on Thursday morning matches up with what Keith Thomas tells reporters.
They're very careful, Port Adelaide and the AFL, in not calling the woman a liar, aren't they? If she's alleging certain things and they're saying, oh, we don't think that's true because there's no evidence, But they don't really want to be calling her a liar because that would go against every respect and responsibility clause
and
there is.
Did Koshy not say in that statement that they would have been okay with her pressing charges or something?
Yeah, he did say that.
So they're accepting of the possibility that she is right in her accusations.
Yeah, if there was evidence, she wouldn't need to press charges. The police would press charges.
Right. Yes.
So it doesn't actually require her to press charge in these situations. The police can go over her head and say, no, this is wrong, and we're going to put charges against Sam Pelpepper.
And Keith Thomas said in his statement yesterday that both Port Adelaide and the AFL Players Association noted that the AFL's report didn't have anything of, you know, alleged sexual misconduct.
We imagine would have been a negotiated outcome with Port Adelaide.
These are murky waters.
Yes.
Because once you have an allegation and then no police involvement, it's effectively open slather. You can say whatever you want. You don't need to say alleged. There's no legalities here. This is just one word against another's, but it's done in really a casual forum because there is no police involved.
Yes.
Makes it very difficult. I think the number one problem here is that Sam Pelpepper was out till 3 a.m. drunk, and that creates these
and he got
issues.
And he got the 1 week ban for breaking team curfew.
He did.
A couple of weeks ago. So that investigation has been very much behind closed doors. Something that was definitely not behind closed doors was Brendan Goddard's antics on Anzac Day yesterday, Thomas, which you and I saw firsthand at the MCG, and it has just blown almost out of proportion in the past 12 to 18 hours.
Quite incredible stuff. I think I get frustrated at elite sportsmen, and I'm talking about Brendan Goddard here, really, saying that this sort of stuff happens all the time.
Which he said this morning,
and he said last night to Channel 7. It doesn't happen all the time because we would see it all the time on the sporting field. The cameras would pick it up. It
doesn't happen all the time in terms of that level of demonstrative behaviour.
And body language.
No, there's feedback given all the time. I get that. Yep. But demonstrative, aggressive behaviour like this and openly arguing on the field doesn't happen all the time. And for him to suggest it does, I think, is disrespecting the level of sporting intellect for a lot of people who watch the game and have also played sport at a high level. Wayne Carey, Nick Riewoldt, David King, Tony Shaw, Matthew Lloyd all came out and said it was too far. Yep. They're not all wrong. They've captained premierships. They've captained their teams. For Goddard and Woosher and Walsfold to laugh it off as nothing, I understand why they're doing it from a PR perspective, but I think they could be handling it a lot better.
Just before we get Max's take, you were in the press conference afterwards there, Thomas, yesterday, and it was a little bit fiery between yourself and John Walsfold.
Well, I wouldn't say it was fiery, but I just think Walsfold had to acknowledge that Goddard went a touch too far in his feedback. He should have said, we want Goddard to be direct all the time. We want him to be open and forthright. But there are times and ways to do this, and perhaps he went a touch far. We'll have a word to him, and we'll make sure that in the next time he wants to give feedback, it's done in the right forum and the right way. Instead, he just danced around it and wasn't able to actually address it, and I think that probably blew it up further than it needed to be.
And I think this blew up further than it needed to be also because of the vision. The vision was so good of how
incredible
strong...
Incredible pictures.
But don't blame the media.
No. But my point is more that this is Brendan Goddard. We've seen him do this before. We've seen him knocking over pretzels in the change room.
Yeah. I had no issue with that,
This is Goddard to type. We know that he is this type of player. We know he gives this type of feedback. We haven't maybe seen it so strong visually.
Yeah.
But I think Riewoldt said as much on AFL 360 last night. This is the type of player he is. He knows him very well and knows this is what he does. So
Riewoldt wasn't dissimilar himself, was he,
yes,
on the football field?
Probably why they get along so well.
Just because you're competitive and you care, it doesn't mean you sometimes don't need to hold your tongue a little bit and just show a little bit more respect to teammates. And the other point that was really well made by, I think, David King on TV, I can't remember, was, is this actually the right way to get through to someone anyway? It probably isn't.
Which is what Goddard was saying on radio on Thursday morning about that. I think in previous successful teams, which I assume he was talking about the Ross Lyon and St Kilda sides, was that he would say that was normal. That's what was constant. That kind of feedback. But he now says with particularly millennials, and he used the term millennials, that doesn't quite work for a lot of those.
So he needs to adjust. He needs to adjust.
Sorry, he's a millennial, by the way.
Yeah,
if you want to be technical about it,
people. Goddard will say, oh, this is me and I need to give strong feedback, and that's fine, but you need to adjust. You need to play the you need to play the cards that you're dealt, and in the end, if you're playing with 17, 18, 19 year olds or 25 year olds, and David Zaharakis is an experienced player as well, it's not a one size fits all approach, and I think Goddard did that. And there's one argument that it's a bad look, And it is a bad look, but I don't really care about the look. It's what actually gets through to the players. And do you reckon Zaharakis and Danaher respected Goddard more or less after this? I don't think it's more.
The best way to solve this whole issue, and this was again floated on AFL 360, put Goddard forward this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Have him play in that role and show by example what he wants them to do.
Well, Mark McClure on the same program said he should be dropped. That's a little bit top from Sellers, surely.
Not like Sellers.
But also, that flies in the face of Goddard saying this is old school, this is how it should be, and the millennials can't cop it. McClure played in the 70s, and he doesn't like it. So I just think there's a way and a time to actually approach teammates, and you don't have to be kind or gentle, but, geez, I'm not sure this works at all, ever.
Time to look ahead to the other Sunday game, and it's hard to think of a more highly anticipated clash between Collingwood and Richmond for quite some time. And a man is all over things Pies and Richmond, and every team in the AFL is Fox Footy chief lab analyst and a man who's very good at poking fun at Eddie Maguire, as we found out on Tuesday night, David King. Hello, Kingy.
Morning, boys. How are we?
We're well, mate. We're well. Have you had to lawyer up after your comments on Eddie on Tuesday night?
Look, he took it well, eventually, not instantly, but that's the old footy club feel, isn't it? You know, when we get there on a Tuesday night this week, normally a Friday night, it's a very relaxed feel and good fun, and Ed's up for a laugh as much as the next.
The votes are always must-watch telly, it has to be said, the predictions and the votes after the game is finished on Fox Footy. Speaking of Ed and the Pies take on Richmond, and they were outstanding on Anzac Day, Collingwood, with that victory over Essendon, and it sets up what should be a really exciting game against the Tigers on Sunday afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the Tigers have made some drastic changes this year, and you've got to give them credit for that. They've gone back to the drawing board with how they play. You know, they've maintained that ability to win contested footy. They're a tough team. They're not as safe as last year. It's a little bit more go forward. They want to run and gun. They want to kick longer. They want to be a bit more aggressive in terms of using the wing line, not so much the absolute boundary. But not a lot's changed with the indicators for success across the competition. Everyone's going to talk about their ability to counter-attack. But right now, they're the number one scoring team for points from forward half, turnovers and stoppage. I mean, that's been the key to Richmond's success last year and the key to the Dogs the previous season. So don't be surprised by what the Pies are doing in the forward half.
Kingy, what we saw with Melbourne against Richmond was the D's trying almost to be too fast and just going under pressure and then having poor efficiency because of it. The Pies have been very handball happy this season. Do you think that can stand up against Richmond's pressure?
Yeah, I think that's the big question, isn't it, Max? When you look at press teams, regardless of what name you give them, whether it's Richmond or Collingwood or Melbourne or whoever, press teams love teams that want to counterattack with hands. It's a recipe for disaster. Richmond's pressure game is clearly the best in the forward half of any other team. It's not just a want to push you wide and corral. It's get physical contact on. It's through speed. We've lauded, you know, Castagna, Butler, all these guys, but they all do it. They all do it. It's a team defence. And I think Richmond, they'll be just sitting there back the next couple of days sort of saying, okay, we know what's coming. We've seen what the Pies have been able to do. Let's hunt after Murray. Let's hunt after anyone that wants to come out with speed. I think the Pies will need a little bit of patience coming out of their back half on Sunday. If not, they'll leak scores. But the major part of it is getting the game played in your forward half. You know, the Pies were soundly beaten the clearance yesterday by the Bombers, who are just an average clearance team. Richmond are better than that. So that'll be where the game is won and lost, on territory post-clearance.
You've already drawn parallels with Richmond last year and the Bulldogs the year before and Collingwood this season. Can we stop dancing around it, and can you go out on a limb and tell Collingwood supporters that they are a chance to win the flag based on those parallels?
Flag.
Oh, Tommy, so you're hunting the big story all the time. I love it. But look, it's very early. I mean, it's very early. We're 5 rounds in. There's 17 rounds to go. I mean, we can't worry about who's going to win the flag. All you can do right now is sit here saying, okay, this is how this team's trying to play,
yep,
and right now it's working. There'll be tweaks made along the journey. No team plays the same for longer than an 8 to 10 week block.
Yep.
So what you're seeing now from every team will change minimum once,
most likely two or three times through the course of the year. But what Collingwood have discovered is a way to use this talent, a way to use this midfield that now spills forward. They've found a couple down back. So let's just enjoy what they're doing and not worry too much about who's winning flags just yet.
They're certainly playing finals-like football, though, aren't they? And it appears to me, based on what you just said there, with Sidebottom and Degoe and these other midfield types pushing forward, they found a system which they haven't really had ever under Nathan Buckley. So big credit has to go to the coach as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I made this comment yesterday. The profile for success is very basic. It's about playing the game in your forward half. They're the number one team at getting a return from forward half scores at the moment. The number one. Look, if they were mid-ranked, you'd say things have changed. But they're the best. When they were the poorest team in the competition last year, at anything you want to talk about inside the forward 50, whether it be marks, whether it be pressure, whether it be the ability to stop the opposition going coast to coast against you from their forward 50, that's been totally flipped on its head. That's a radical change. So they've modernised, they've appreciated what success looks like, and now it's starting to feed off itself. As soon as you give players reward for this sort of mechanism, then all of a sudden it grows legs of its own. So let's just appreciate what they're doing. Tommy, I know you want to nominate a flag winner right now.
No, in all seriousness, the actual reason I'm asking, apart from I like a story, is that we saw the Bulldogs come from nowhere in 2016 and we saw the Tigers come from nowhere in 2017. And I just wonder whether it's becoming more the norm to win a flag based on really nothing.
But do you think that them coming from nowhere, the Dogs particularly in 2016, was they were thereabouts? They won 14, 15 games that season in that group of teams that did so, and then put it all together. And as Kingy says, teams change.
Yes.
That was them finally striking gold for that month of footy. And it's whether Collingwood can maybe do that is the question.
Yeah,
I think, to not jump over Toby, I think what you do, you'll all have a different area of the game that you rate as an indicator for success. You know, some say it's the ability to score, some say it's the ability to defend. It could be territory. It could just be a star-studded midfield. The Adelaide Crows got a star-studded forward line. So there are different things that we all rate. And I think right now what I've adjusted to is being able to win ground balls in your forward line, which creates scores, and then locking it in your forward line, which is the pressure in the forward half that we always talk about. If you want to rank that, right now Collingwood are the best at it. Simple as that, along with Richmond. Richmond have got the most pressure in there, but Collingwood get bigger bang for their buck. They're scoring 56 points from forward half work, whereas Richmond are scoring 50. But Richmond have been doing this for 18 months, so they are a well-oiled machine. Collingwood, they've been doing it for 5 weeks. So there's a long, long way to go, and a lot will change.
Well, it makes certainly for a big game on Sunday afternoon, Kingy. At the same time, though, you're heading across the west and getting the frequent flyer points up there for the first ever derby at Optus Stadium between the Eagles and the Dockers. You're talking about, you know, not getting ahead of ourselves 5 weeks in, but surely I don't think I have to put the question out there. Have you been really surprised by what the Dockers and the Eagles have been able to dish up so far in this season?
I've been thrilled with the Dockers. I've been a Ross supporter for a long time, and people keep telling me that Ross is not a rebuilder. He didn't leave St Kilda in great condition. He wasn't prepared to hang around and go through the 3, 4, 5 years of pain. Goes to Fremantle. They have their opportunity to win it. They don't. They've got to go back to the drawing board. He called it a rewire or a replumb. And I think you're starting to see the fruits of what he's talking about. I mean, they've got a couple of stars in Brayshaw and Chera. We know that, picks 2 and 5. But he's been able to bring in a guy called Crowden, who's top half a dozen in the competition for pressure, playing his role. Nathan Fyfe is the best player in the competition any time the game stops. When you go to a clearance situation, he has just become a wrecking ball. And I think he's back to his absolute best. Mundy and Ballantyne playing forward and centre have been sensational. Pierce coming back. Luke Ryan's going to be a quality leader down back for a number of years. So everything that they've got and everything that they've done has come together perfectly this season. I think they're really on the right path with the way they want to play. It's back to that forward half press. And if you just, you know, want to go back 6 or 7 years, Ross Lyon had the best press in the game, both at St Kilda and then when he went to Fremantle. So he knows how the press looks.
on a new ground over there. There's been some teething problems with the hardness and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, not many interstate teams are going to go to Perth and walk away with 4 points this year. I know it's the derby this week. West Coast have been beautiful ball movers. They've had some stars come back into that team over the last couple of weeks. This is going to be an absolute belter, this game. I just feel like West Coast are going to go in as favourites, but I'm just leaning towards Fremantle, having a look at what Fife's been able to do. And Sandilands is another one that we don't often talk about. But you just have a look at where his hit zones are at the moment. Been quite aggressive and quite productive. So they're a real challenge at the moment, the Dockers.
Has Nathan Wilson been maybe the best recruit of the trade period? I feel like we all sort of underrated it as maybe the Victorian media because it was GWS to Fremantle, but gee, he's been good.
Yeah, and look, GWS didn't want to lose him. He had to go back. His partner was pregnant, so it was a no-brainer, the move. I think when Ross finally succumbed to Stephen Hill being a half-back flanker, not a midfielder, and now all of a sudden Wilson goes on the other half-back flank, you've got two really damaging, creative corridor ball users that when they bite off the aggressive target and it hits, they generally score. And I think that's been a real win for Freo.
Talk to us about Andrew Gaff and Jeremy McGovern, Kingy, because it doesn't seem to be affecting their form, this contract speculation, but how highly do you rate both of those players and how pivotal can they be in this match against Fremantle?
Well, Gaffy's an interesting one, isn't he, Tom? We've talked about him quite a few times over the last couple of years. What is Andrew Gaff? What is he as a player? I'm not sure whether he's an outside wingman that's just an overlap machine that can rack up 30 disposals week in, week out and really not have maximum damage on the scoreboard or maximum damage with his disposals. Or is he what we've seen lately? And we've seen him go into centre bounces. We've seen him become a bit more of a contested warrior in tight and tough. And I think his form's really improved. I mean, I'm not sure whether you've seen much of him this year, but
yeah, I have.
He's had a fantastic season. What's his worth? I mean, you've got a better handle on that than me. And who would be looking for him?
Well, a team like St Kilda is the obvious one, isn't it? They need some skill and some class and some outside polish. But it depends how much you're willing to pay for a bloke who really has to get given the ball to get bulk possessions. He doesn't go and get it a hell of a lot. Certainly stats last year proved that. I think he wants to be a midfielder, doesn't he, Benny?
Yeah.
But he's really a classy winger at the moment. He's in that age bracket where
What would he do for St Kilda? How would he change them?
Well,
would he take them six spots up the ladder?
No.
No,
he wouldn't take them six spots up the ladder. I think he'd probably take them two or three spots up the ladder and give them a player who can kick, and they desperately need that because you look at the moment, their best players aren't necessarily their best kicks either. Seb Ross and Jack Stephen get a lot of the ball. They don't kick it that well. Billings doesn't get enough of the ball, but does kick it that well, or does kick it well around the field. I think St Kilda would be willing to pay overs for him, $800,000, $900,000 a year. I think he's probably only worth $650,000, $700,000, thereabouts.
Is there a player that St Kilda can get that can take them six spots up the ladder, or is it it's not that simple?
Well, I just don't see that. I don't subscribe to the logic that if you're going to spend that sort of money and that person can't drive you six spots up the ladder. I mean, most people are going to have them outside the eight at the moment. You may even have them as low as sort of 14, 15. If they are that low, what's the point of getting a player that's only going to take you up two or three spots up the ladder for that sort of cash? I don't see the value in that.
Maybe they just need to get someone because they haven't got anyone. They haven't been able to attract any even slightly big fish to the club.
You think there's a flow-on effect?
How did that philosophy work for Collingwood for 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, no,
that doesn't work. I think you need. I don't think that's right. I think that's playing super coach, not being really wise. I think you've got to target. Sydney had great success because they targeted a role for a particular player, and they found the player they could get, regardless of what cost, and they went and got him. Hawthorn, the exact same. You've got to have a role for that player. They've got to be able to impact. And once that spot's sorted, it's got to help you drive up the ladder. I'm not convinced that a Gaff is the person to drive St Kilda up four or five spots up the ladder, maybe six or seven.
Well, he'll be taking part in a huge Western Derby on Sunday afternoon. Kingy, just one more before we let you go. A lot of controversy about the Ross Glendinning medal right throughout the week. Have you got a suggestion for the medal that should be named? Should it be the Waterhouse Sampy kind of
medal?
Yes.
Ooh. Very good. Metropolis.
Yes.
Daniel Metropolis medal. Could be that. Who else have we got that's gone both clubs?
Almost Ballantyne medal.
Peter Sumik has coached at both clubs, hasn't he? Assistant? No, am I right in saying that? Yes, he has.
Do we need a medal? Do we really need a medal for the clash?
Well, the WA people want a medal.
Well, once there is a medal, I can't imagine getting rid of that medal. That's the point.
I think what we do,
we do what we've always done in the tradition of the Ross Glendening medal, is, as Ross did one time, just walked out and made his own Ross Glendening medal. Maybe he should just walk out and just name it on the spot himself. Call it whatever he wants to call it.
This is who I think was the best player today.
You.
Yeah. That could work well. But obviously the biggest travesty out of all of this is that we haven't seen the two coaches in the CUB hats, which have always been a big highlight of the week. Kingy, really appreciate your time on the Fox Footy podcast. Go well on the weekend.
Cheers, boys.
Bye, Kingy.
Thank you very much to Fox Footy's own David King, who's always in very fine form on the Fox Footy podcast. Another big game this weekend is Sydney taking on Geelong. And big news on Tuesday, Maxi, dropping that Lance Franklin will miss with a bruised heel. And there could be a little bit more fallout to that, considering that the heel seemed to...
It resulted from the round one game at Optus Stadium, did it not?
Yes, get worse on that occasion. Plus Dan Hanbury out with that groin injury, which he's been struggling in with as well. Joel Selwood, though, will be playing. So another further blow for the Swans, because he got off at the tribunal on Tuesday night in a good old-fashioned sort of witness stand argument. Drew Jones for Fox Sports News covered very, very well via...
He was very good, Drew. He broadly just argued it was nothing, didn't he?
Which I think is entirely fair.
Yeah, I think it was nothing. Probably a free kick, Max. That's about it. Yeah. I don't agree with the argument that he was just trying to protect his brother. Who cares? What, two wrongs don't make a right. But there wasn't enough in it for a suspension.
So right decision that he got off. Not only got off the suspension, the one-week suspension, but got off altogether. So there was no fine.
The AFL doesn't like the look of someone being on the top of another person. And that,
when the player's vulnerable.
He's defenceless and vulnerable, but... I don't think there's enough force in this to warrant a report or a suspension.
This is the perfect use of the tribunal for mine. Something that, by the letter of the law, because of the contact, where it was and all that, is a suspension. But then you counter it and you put some reasonable opinion into it, and it wasn't.
Yeah. So Lindsay Thomas, the guy he hit, got 1 week for hitting Joel Selwood, which he accepted on Monday, and then copped the 3 weeks for the most infamous incident, which was the bump to Scott Selwood that apparently left Scott with a big headache and vomiting as well, and in doubt to take on the Swans this weekend.
Yeah, right call, I think. Three, I would have been happy. Well, I would have been content with two, but also probably content with four, which tells me that three is probably about right in my book. It's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because he ran past the ball, but you are taught as a footballer to get your ass in the way and turn and then pick up the ball, for lack of a better term, Max. Are we allowed to say that? We need to bleep that out. But in the modern game, you actually just have to bend over and pick it up. And you have to trust that the other person's not going to hit you in the head. That's what Selwood was doing. Thomas wasn't. He won't be playing AFL football again, I wouldn't have thought, Thomas.
So that's it for him?
Well, if Port Adelaide at their best and don't have heaps of injuries, then I can't see how he's going to fit in.
He should not be in their best 22.
No, as a player, he's probably not in there. And
yes, that's
he's
what I
got
mean.
A long list of misdemeanors now. The VFL last year, was
that
it?
That was worse.
That was bad.
Twice. Yeah, the first one was bad. Then he got suspended when in his return game.
So, I was content with this, but I think the most contentious ones were the Ryan Burton bump.
Yes, that really opened up a can of worms amongst the AFL pundits in the industry, Maxi.
So this is this question of the AFL sort of been teaching us that the head is sacrosanct. We have to protect the head. We have to protect from concussions. And then when Jack Zeeble has this issue, then Ryan Burton does not receive any penalty from the MRO, Michael Christian, which was strange for mine.
So the major word coming from players and coaches is confusing or confusion.
Yes. Yeah. Because of the, not quite a double standard, but you compare it to Mark Lacroix. This was the one that a lot of people compared it to.
Ainsworth a couple of weeks ago.
Brayden Ainsworth. Mm-hmm. And he got nothing for that as well. This was worse than that, but clearly not worse enough to be worth a penalty. Are we trying to draw a line that is much too thin to possibly draw? Or do we need to just be a lot more harsh and stamp out any of these things and go back to almost based on the result, based on the medical report? Because I always thought that was a little bit unfair, because that's an unforeseen circumstance. If you have had an incident that has caused a concussion, you weren't to blame for the exact specifics of that. But you were if you were suspended. But that's almost more even than what's happened here, because Ryan Burton getting off is a bit weird.
I actually agreed with him getting off. I think if you bump legally and there's a clash of heads, well, so be it.
Why do we want to protect the bump?
Why do we want to protect the bump?
Why do we want to protect the bump?
I think the bump's a big part of the game.
Is it?
But we say that.
The legal bump is.
But how many hip and shoulder shepherds do you see these days?
Not many, and that's fine. But if you have a legal one that's to the waist or the body, it's great. I love that that part of the game.
Yeah, sure. But there are elements of this that are fine, and there's an element of this that is just traditionalism. It's just, well, it's the way it's always been. It's the bump. It's manly. It's aggressive.
No, I don't think like
that. Put your body on the line.
I actually enjoy it, and I like the way the really strong players impact contests with strong bumps.
That's fine, and using your body in that way has to stay in the game because that's a benefit to size. Otherwise, everyone's going to be a small forward.
Yeah.
But you need to have these scenarios where you look at the bump and say, are we protecting this for its own sake? Because it's always been in the game and because people get riled up when you say it's getting taken out of the game. If people are getting hurt, we need to change.
But how are they getting hurt? You know what I'm saying? Like, is it consistent that people are getting clashed heads or whiplash? Or is it really just the odd occasion where that's happening? And most of the time, people are breaking ribs. And if people are breaking ribs, I say play on.
Right.
It is a fierce game, the bump. It's only completely wrong if the bump is high. And if the bump is high, I would be throwing the book at players.
I understand, but it's almost, if you continue to penalise players for things like Ryan Burton's act, where a concussion results, they will be less likely to bump in the process. We had a lot of talk on, I think on Twitter, it was a few journalists talking about this. We want players to tackle in that scenario, not bump. Mm. And everyone's saying, well, why? He's allowed to bump. Yes, he's allowed to, but he shouldn't.
Yeah, that's
for
fair.
Player safety reasons.
Yes,
he has both options, but one of them is a lot more dangerous.
Yeah, that's fair. The game is dangerous.
So yeah. Ryan Burton will be allowed to take on St Kilda this weekend. That'll be the Joel Smith
I'll
Cup.
I'll be down there.
Down in Launceston.
I'll be down there.
Are you awarding the Joel Smith Cup?
I'll be awarding the Ben McAvoy Cup.
Could be two Ben McAvoy as well.
Or the Russell Green Cup as well.
Oh, infamously for our Generation X baby boomers kind of listeners out there on the Fox Footy podcast. So let's go through the round six games. Kicking off with, this is a huge game, Western Bulldogs and Carlton for the Jimmy Plunkett
is it big,
Cup.
Is it a big game?
I think it is. Yeah. I think Carlton are a huge chance to beat the Dogs here.
Mm. Oh,
I think this is as ordinary Friday night as there's been all year.
Yeah, it will be. But in terms for both clubs and both supporter bases, like one of them is going to be walking away with the win here, unless we see another draw momentum.
Ooh, yes. Ooh. if the Dogs don't win this, the heat on them should be turned up to blue.
Yeah.
Incredibly hot. They really should win this by a good 5-6 goals. Yeah. Carlton is terrible. The Dogs are not. They did not play well against Fremantle at Optus Stadium, but no one has done that this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think the Dogs will win.
And I think we're learning that Fremantle is better than people thought, so the Dogs really should win.
Yeah. Carlton were better, though, against West Coast.
And I saw that whole game in its entirety, and I thought it was pretty good.
They were better. They had that defensive mindset back. They've reined it back in a little bit because my understanding is that the club, Bolton, was really keen to go this aggressive attacking mentality the first 4 weeks.
Yeah.
He then reined it back in, and that was the result against West Coast. Still a loss, but a far more respectable result.
Down in Geelong on Saturday at GMHBA Stadium, there, Maxi, is the Jason Mooney Cup. Geelong and Sydney. Of course, Jason Mooney, brother of Cameron, briefly played with the Swans.
Mm. And Nick Davis, you star cup.
That was harsh.
Too soon.
Unnecessary.
Who wins this game there, Tom?
Geelong.
Can I just point out, so Sydney last week, we talked about the power rankings last time, and I said Sydney's second, and I said I think it's only because we respect them as a club. It's not based on their talent, not based on how they played this season.
I think they would, if we had done the power rankings this week, which has been a bit jumbled, we haven't had a chance to do it. I reckon they would have taken a dive this week.
I'm certain. And we can talk about the theory, Tom, and how it did lead to Adelaide beating Sydney.
I wasn't going to mention it, but now you mention it.
As predicted.
Every week it happens.
But remind listeners of the theory.
The theory is when two teams play against each other and one of those teams has lost the week before and one has won the week before.
Unconvincingly.
One unconvincingly the week before. The team that loses the week before then beats the team that wins the week before. And there are countless examples of this. And it really is a psychologist theory because the team that wins badly the week before doesn't have that whack they need, whereas the team that loses the week before is jolted into action. That's the theorem.
Are we talking about Geelong-Sydney here? Because Geelong won...
No, so it's not applicable for every game, Ben. There's too many injuries for Sydney.
When Tom thinks it's right.
Yeah, well, it has been. Adelaide-Sydney was the perfect example of that last week.
Yep,
absolutely
following up,
perfect.
Following up on Port Essendon.
Yeah, it happens all the time. Anyway.
Geelong.
Geelong win?
Geelong.
Who wins the Daniel Motlock Cup?
This is the hardest
between
game
North
to tip.
And Port Adelaide.
This is actually, surprisingly tough to
really
tip.
Difficult to tip. I tipped Port Adelaide, but I'm not really happy with that tip. But if I tipped the Kangaroos, I also wouldn't be happy with that tip. I don't know.
I think Port respond. I think this is as close to that as we get, yeah. Except for the win part with the North, obviously.
How many North won in a row? Three in a row? I don't think North is good enough to win four in a row, which is why I've tipped Port. But based on what? I don't know. This is tough.
I'd still like to see a lot more from North before we decide that they're actually good, which I think people are starting to talk them up as. But we talked about their defensive numbers last week, and I said that that was unfair because of the teams they played and the swamp they played in round one. We're getting there, but not there yet. Not enough that I would tip them over Port.
Port dropped this game, though. I think they're going to lose a lot of people from the bandwagon.
Yes, absolutely. And North will gain more.
GWS and Brisbane for the Joel Patful Cup.
Oh.
Of course, Joel Patful spent a year on GWS list without playing as well, just more for contractual purposes.
But the
Giants and the Lions take on each other. First game at Spotless Stadium for the year there, Thomas.
Oh, it's good to have them back at the home of Sydney Thunder. I think the GWS Giants will win this game and win it quite... This could be a real bloodbath, this match, I feel.
An occasional home of the Western Sydney Wanderers as well, the Spotless
Stadium. Spotless Stadium, a really boutique venue. I've been there.
Boutique. It's like the word boutique was coined for that stadium.
Boutique's nightclub in Melbourne on Greville Street that just recently reopened as well, Ben and Max. I'm sure you've both been there.
Thoughts, Tom?
On the nightclub?
Yes.
Yeah, it's good venue, real boutique sort of little spot there.
I'm surprised
there.
You've visited good. That recently.
No, I haven't been there recently.
GWS will win this game.
We mentioned Hawthorn and St Kilda for the Joel Smith Cup. You're heading down there with a beanie and gloves?
Yeah, I'll be wearing... I actually need to borrow your Fox Sports jacket if I can, because I've left mine in the 3AW box at the MCG, which is now locked.
I'll just pick up that organisation name off the floor.
Hawthorn win this, but St Kilda gave it a crack down there 2 years ago.
They did.
They're playing some better footy. I still think the worst thing that could have happened for St Kilda is for the Hawks to lose against North Melbourne.
Oh, yes.
And that's exactly what happened. So I think the Hawks are going to come back and come back strong.
Yes.
They play so well at Launceston. They do that ground very, very well. And the Nathan Bock Cup between Adelaide and the Gold Coast Suns. Too soon? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
The big game for the Crows and the Suns. How are they going? They just got over the line against Brisbane.
As the viewer of the Q Clash, I will say that they were okay. And Brisbane was less not okay, I guess.
Yeah, the Crows.
I love the use of the viewer singular there.
Yes, thank you. They're not.
We're both going for the Crows.
Adelaide's going to win that game.
Essendon and Melbourne. So three second hardest games on Sunday. I can't wait to see all these three games. The Chris Heffernan Cup between Essendon and Melbourne. Heffernan now on the board, I think.
I was going to go for the Gary Moorcroft Cup, but that's okay as well.
That's good for you, Thomas.
I've tipped Melbourne, basically just because I think Melbourne at their best are better than Essendon at their best, Max.
I completely agree with that statement. I hate tipping Essendon. Essendon is the most frustrating team in the comp because they play more than any other team on emotion. It's like they need to be revved up to win. It's like they need a reason. They need to have lost the previous... They need the theorem.
They couldn't have had that much emotion on it. Like, much more emotion on Anzac Day.
That's the thing. It's bizarre. Yeah. You know, they come into that Port game, they're under so much pressure, they win that. And then they sort of level off into the Anzac Day game.
Maybe they're just not that good. And when they actually do play well, it's an anomaly.
They're too reliant on emotion.
Listening to Nick Riewoldt in 360 was fascinating. And St Kilda play a bit this way as well. Because there's trying... And then there's really trying hard.
Yes.
And Essendon, they might think they're trying, but how often do they really give it a crack?
Yeah.
Whereas Richmond seems like at the moment they're living. Grant Thomas had a saying, 100% effort, 100% of the time from 100% of the players, and you make finals, no matter who you are. That's what he says.
Collingwood, and speaking of Richmond as well, we talked to Kingy about that just beforehand for the Stephen McKee Cup.
Beautiful.
That was a Julian DeStoop entry as well. Nice work from you, Jules, a loyal Fox Footy podcast listener. Are the Pies up to the task on Sunday?
They're up to the task of competing with them. I'm not sure they're up to the task of winning, but I think even a 20-point loss has them well-positioned. Yeah, not a tick, but it has them well-positioned because it just proves they can match it with the best, and that's something they haven't been able to do since Mick Malthouse was in charge.
Richmond will not lose at the MCG more than once this year.
Yeah.
I do not think this will be that loss. I don't know when that loss will be, but they will not lose more than once.
Yeah, probably a fair call. They're defending the MCG better than any other side in the competition.
Yes.
Nathan Buckley's very much aware of that, said that in his press conference last night. Then the Western Derby at the Rockhard Optus Stadium out there in
on the
West.
Concrete.
It was built on concrete, though. Fremantle and the West Coast Eagles for the Daniel Metropolis Cup with the Waterhouse Sampy medal to be given out of the game.
Waterhouse Sampy medal. I used to love Clive. I saw him kick.
Sorry, used to love.
Yeah, I was over him now. I saw him kick 7 and Tony Modra kicked 10 against Melbourne at the G one day in 1999.
Was that a Friday night game?
Yeah, it was a night game. Yeah. Waterhouse kicked 7, Modra 10. Yeah. Unbelievable. Oh. Jamie Shanahan did not know what was going on. It was 1999. I am going for Fremantle. I'm going for Fremantle mainly because I wasn't impressed with West Coast against Carlton. And I'm going on recent form, and basically that's it.
I'm trying to not go against recent form, so I'm going to tip West Coast. I do think they are just a better team because I'm still yet to be convinced by Fremantle. One last thing. We talked about the Ross Glendening medal. I didn't bring this up with Kingy. Why does Port v Geelong have a medal?
What is the medal?
Peter Badko VC medal.
Oh, it does,
It's just like an Anzac medal. It's like, it's very nice and all, but that's not a marquee fixture necessarily. I don't think every game needs a medal.
Yes, I agree. One of my biggest complaints with the AFL is that there's too many different rounds all the time. Mm. And then they take off one round and they take off the women's breast cancer round, which is arguably the most important of the lot.
Right.
So,
Except when we have the very good Fox Footy theme rounds. They're the best.
Yes.
Watch out for that as well. There's some stuff coming around that in sort of early June. There's some good stuff coming about this weekend's or this year's Fox Footy themed round.
I sent some real PR sort of stuff from Ben here and I love it.
Yes,
it's good.
I've heard a couple of whispers and it's very, very
Who are you tipping, Fremantle or West Coast,
Ben? I'm tipping the Dockers.
Yeah, so am I. With Purple Pro. I don't know why. I just feel like West Coast weren't great against Carlton.
And I'm looking forward to Clive Waterhouse being out in the ground and presenting his medal on Sunday.
Please.
That would be an enormous moment in AFL history.
The only famous sportsman in the world called Clive. Oh, no, Clive Rose, actually. Left-arm spinner. He's the only other one I can think of. My grandfather's name is Clive. It's a name out of the 1930s.
That is probably the most niche comment you could have said.
Can you imagine a baby named Clive?
Clivey.
It's like a baby named Stanley. It doesn't work.
I think we're done here,
I think we're well and truly done here on the Fox Footy podcast. And make sure you keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.
Any team that is a press team, that is a pressure team, you know, they're looking for that. They're looking for that handball game. They love the handball game coming at them, because when it fails big, and generally costs goals.
What?
You there, boys?
On earth was that?
Do you want to start that answer again, King? Sorry, I don't know what the hell.
Abba,
I do like Abba. Running in there?
I've got no idea. Sorry.
I don't know now how to handle.